All right, well, why don't we go ahead and get started? Thank you all for joining us this evening. Just one brief announcement. Everybody should have gotten an email from Lauren. It is that time of year when we talk about vaccines. So she did send out the notice and the policy with regards to flu vaccination. Please check that and get things done accordingly. You can email that information directly back to the Lauren. That's really all that I have to say. We are very lucky tonight. We have some guest speakers tonight. Carrie Powers, who is the CEO from Reprise Biomedical, as well as Anthony Bates, who is one of their regional account directors. They're going to be talking about the Miro 3D product. We've briefly mentioned this on other calls in the past, but we are lucky enough to have them tonight to kind of talk a little bit more about the product, some data behind its use, and just answer any questions that you have about it. So thank you both for being on the call this evening, and I will turn over the floor to you both.
Thank you very much, Dr. Karamadi, and welcome everybody, and thank you for joining tonight. With me again is Anthony Bates. He is the account director. It's a little late for Dr. Karamadi's location. So we do have account directors throughout the United States. So depending on where you reside, there may be somebody else specifically calling on your area. I'm happy to talk tonight a little bit about Miro 3D and Reprise Biomedical. I'll bring up a slide, a presentation in a second here, but I just wanted to mention as I do that, Miro 3D, or sorry, Reprise Biomedical was created in 2019. I'm one of the founders of the company, and have been in medical devices for just over about 20 years, but prior to that was a nurse, in the field. Started in wound care, went into interventional cardiology, and now I'm back into wound care via the industry route. So I do have a little bit of experience, although dated into the wound care space. So, with that in mind, I will talk a little bit about our technology as it relates to very a clinical focus and in terms of where we see this fitting into your place clinically to serve your patients. So can everybody see my screen that has a presentation? Okay. All right. So Miro 3D, I'm going to talk a little bit about the technology because it is a different, this is really what differentiates it from everything else that you have in the form of a skin substitute today in the space. I'll go over a little bit of our preclinical data, our clinical experiences through a couple of different case studies, and then talk a little bit about our pipeline. But really, in terms of leveraging off of our three-dimensional technology. So let's go through our technology first. First of all, this is what Miro 3D looks like on a picture form. Everyone says they have a proprietary technology, but our proprietary technology is really what allows us to have a 2 centimeter thick scaffold that we can bring into the marketplace. So if you think about that for just a minute, everything that you're used to using in terms of a skin substitute is in millimeters in thickness. So it's more like a sheet. This is more like a sponge, 2 centimeters thick. We believe that the thickest skin sub out on the market today is about a half of centimeter, so 5 millimeters. And again, we're 2 centimeters. So manufactured from perfusion decellularized porcine liver. So we're made from a pig liver. And the reason why we say perfusion decellularization is that we can cannulate a three-dimensional organ like a liver, like a heart, like a kidney, like a spleen, and anything that has a blood supply to it. And we need to wash that or perfuse that, decell that from the inside of that organ out. Most of your competitive product, or most of our competitive products, rather, that you use today, which are flat in nature, all come from a flat starting source. So if you think about dermis, fish skin, placenta, amniotic tissue, all of those are flat to begin with. And so they utilize what's called a decellularization, which is simply removing cells from that scaffolder from that source. We need to perfuse it from the inside out in order to do that. And that's why we can end up with a 2 centimeter thick product. So across the size, if you do have a screen in front of you, we offer a size that's really like a cube, a 2 by 2 by 2 centimeter thick cube, all the way up to a 10 by 5 centimeter, 2 centimeter thick block. And that 10 by 5 visually looks like a dry eraser. We have six sizes in total, four in between the largest and the smallest size. Here's a quick look at what that perfusion decellularization technology looks like. So the photos on the bottom actually show us cannulating the hepatic vein of the liver. And over a series of washes, we're able to again rinse that from the inside out. At 24 hours, what you're left with is a pure collagen scaffold of liver. From that point, we're able to gravity hang that, recannulate the hepatic vein, and just pump ambient air through that over about 72 hours. That kind of puffs it up or back into its natural state. So then we can cut it to the blocks and the cube sizes that I showed on the previous slide. I talked a little bit about the competitive comparison of how generally scaffolds are decellularized in comparison to our perfusion decellularization. But then that translates really to what I show in a picture form at the bottom of that slide. Again, with all of our other skin substitutes or grafts that you're used to using being 1 to 5 millimeters in thickness, ours is 2. So that really, the question really is, okay, where does that fit from a clinical perspective into your practices? And when we took a look at this, obviously there are a lot of flat skin substitutes on the market. Those are very nice to cover and protect wounds. But when you get down to, let's say, stage 3, stage 4 pressure injuries, they have depth to them. They have tunneling, they have undermining, as well as other wounds. But stage 3 and 4 visually is just easy to think through. So down to the bone, down to the fascia, really discrete areas that you need to get to in order to heal those discrete places. And so I'd like to think of full thickness wounds, not the only indication or application for 3D, but very visually easy to think about when you're talking about Mural 3D. What is great about our product, and anecdotally, what we've heard, we've had this on the market since 2022, is that it's almost like a putty. You can take this, you can shape it, you can cut it, you can form it, you can place it so it's fully opposing to all the wound, a full wound wall apposition to all the sides of that wound. So if you think about a sheet graft, which really protects over that surface in which you place it, you think about Mural 3D, which is almost like a sponge or a putty that you can really conform to that wound bed. So you can cover the base and you can cover the sides. So think about it as being able to integrate not only to the bottom or the base of that wound, but also integrate in the sides of that wound and really build that granulation tissue up and fill in that deficit space. When I talk about, and salespeople hate this when I say this, but from a clinical perspective, I believe that Mural 3D fits in the spaces where you need to build up granulation tissue up to a certain surface level. And at that point, once you do that, then it's more clinically appropriate to go back to what you're currently using, which is your amniotic tissues or whatever you prefer from a flat graft standpoint. But Mural 3D is really the product that gives you the boost to be able to build up that tissue, get it to the surface where you want it, and finish with what's more medically appropriate or clinically appropriate at that point. So that's where I see Mural 3D fitting into the space. Again, our size configurations that we offer are 2x2, 3x3, 4x4, 5x5, a 7x5, and a 10x5. All of these can be cut before you use them, so you can use them and shape them as you see fit. With respect to our clinical indications, these look very similar, I'm sure, to a lot of the grafts or skin subs that you use currently today. We have a head-to-toe indication. The indications in bold are kind of the ones where we are seeing the most uptake with respect to clinical applications. So partial full thickness wounds, pressure ulcers, of course, diabetic ulcers, tunneling and undermining wounds, surgical wounds. And we really play nicely in surgical dehiscence. So we've seen an increase where of use in that space as well. We have 2 contraindications. Those include number 1, any patient that has a known sensitivity to porcine or porcine allergy. And number 2, for third degree burns. We are not indicated specifically for third degree burns. In terms of product prep, it's very simple. We do not have any special storage or temperature shipping controls on our product. It is shelf stable. We have a 3-year shelf life on it. You simply, it comes in a corrugated box, and in that box is a foil pouch. That foil pouch is the sterile barrier, and inside that foil pouch is a plastic tray with a Tyvek lid over the top of that. So you simply, when you're ready to use it, take that box out, open it up, open the pouch, take the Tyvek lid off, and you have your cube or your block. We say if you would like to shape it or cut it, you want to do that before you wet it. You can do that after you wet it, but it's a lot easier to handle when it's dry. So that's just a nice tip or trick for you. If you would like to wet it, it's not required, but if you want to wet the product just to give it a little bit more pliability, it will maintain its 2-centimeter thick shape. It's not going to disintegrate like a sugar cube or like a cotton candy would. It will maintain that, but it will get more saturated. So it becomes a little bit more pliable. We have many providers that choose not to wet it or hydrate it prior to application. They feel like that the wound bed has enough exudate or fluid in it, and that fluid will just uptake as it's placed in that patient. And we have others that really like the tactile feel of having almost like a putty in their hand, so they would like to wet it. You can let it sit for up to 5 minutes if you want to. There's no magic in doing that. From a clinical perspective, I often educate that you should take the saline, dip it in saline, just take the crisp out of that block or that cube, and then it's very moldable into any space that you want it to go to. Again, just like any other skin substitute that you would use, you want to place this in as much maximum contact with the native tissue so that it has the opportunity to ensure that it can integrate. It is extremely porous, and the uptake and integration we've seen, which I'll show you in a little bit, is very quick as a result of that. But it's really important, especially when you're dealing with a deficit, when you're dealing with a lot of undermining. As you know, the flat grafts often like to roll. This will conform. So it's important that you do not flat. You don't necessarily want to flatten it down by smashing it, but you do want to conform it to all those wound walls by gently tamping that area to the space that you want it to cover. In terms of securing the product, so we have providers who will often use Steri-Strips. You want to put an AdaptIC over the top of it and any bandage. Let's say you were treating a DFU. Often our providers will use a Coban or something that secures that dressing in place. Use what you're used to using. There should be no magic or difference with respect to securing your skin substitute in place. Whatever you have in your bag is appropriate. You can, and I want to mention that if it feels like you need to suture it or staple it in place, it does have some tensile strength because it is pure collagen, and it will accept a suture or a staple if that's a preferred fixation method as well. Just a quick word on market availability and reimbursement. Again, I wouldn't be talking to you if it wasn't reimbursable in the outpatient space or in the mobile wound care space. We received FDA clearance for this product in August of 2022, but as you well know, we had to apply for our HCPCS code, and that was finally granted almost a year later in October, or over a year later, October of 2023. So we've had almost a full year into the outpatient space in terms of reimbursement. We do have an A code. It's A2025, but the mechanics in terms of how that operates for billing and coding and filling out the claim 1500 form is identical. The difference with our product only is in the way that it's defined by CMS. Excuse me. So CMS defines A2025 per cubic centimeter, whereas every other skin substitute that you've been using is per square centimeter. So that is a critical difference, especially when you're documenting what volume of product you use. So I'd like to give the example. When you're used to using, let's say, a 2x2 flat skin substitute, that's 4 square centimeters. If you're using a 2x2 Mural 3D, you need to multiply it by the 2 cubes that, or the 2 centimeters thickness, which is 8 cubic centimeters. So a 2x2x2 is 8, whereas a flat 2x2 is just 4. If you were to input the incorrect units on the claim form, You would be very disappointed when you receive the reimbursement for that product. So that is one notable difference. For providers who have to document CPT codes, however, the CPT codes that you currently use for your skin substitutes are exactly the same CPT codes that you should be using for our product. So although our product is defined by cubes, the CPT codes applications for the wound that you're treating is still the same as square. So it's the 15271 to 15278 that still apply. All right, so that's kind of just the background of the product itself. I'm just going to pause and ask if anybody has any questions before I move on to some preclinical data.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. How long are we leaving this in? We see the patients once a week. Is this twice a week that you would do this, or is it once a week? What is your time frame?
So it's the same as you would normally for a skin substitute. So once a week you want to see your patient. And I like to say that so we follow the same LCD under the state that you currently operate. All LCDs, if approved, are 10 uses up to 20 within 12 weeks. We still follow that same guideline. But from a clinical perspective, what we're really seeing is that this is pretty well integrated at the 7-day time point. And I like to educate if the wound looks like it is improving significantly. I like to see providers kind of hash it, remind the wound that it's there, get it to bleed a little bit, debride it, and then don't leave whatever Mural 3D resides. Don't put another Mural 3D on, but redress it with clean dressings. And at post day 14 from the original application, that's kind of your D-day. So you decide, should I reapply a Mural 3D? Does the bed look good? Am I ready to move on to an amniotic or whatever other choice graft you have? But that's the 14-day time point is kind of, we've seen very, very good results if you don't rip it out at 7 days and you let it do its job until 14, as long as the wound looks good and not infected.
Any problem putting it over bone?
Yes, you can put it over bone. We've had excellent results placing it over bone, placing it over tendon. We actually have an anecdotal result recently that somebody placed it over hardware and has tissue growing over that hardware space as well. So, yes.
And how cleaned up does the wound have to be? Before we put it in.
So with respect to osteo, no active osteo, it has to be controlled. Obviously free of necrotic tissue. It should not be actively infected. It should be controlled. If the wound bed looks like it's prepped and ready, then it's appropriate. I would say don't change your practice with respect to when you place other grafts. But if it's highly infected, the macrophages are going to come in and eat it up anyway, and you're going to be upset that it goes away quickly. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay. All right. Let me go through some preclinical study work. I like to disclose, when we did a 90-day porcine study, the implant study, we did this really because when somebody approached me and said, "Do you want to, are you interested in starting this company because we have this really neat technology?" And on and on. And I said, "Well, what is it? And what is it going to do if you've implanted in a living animal or a person in a living animal in this case?" And so what we did is we took did an animal study. So we created the Mural 3D. We had 2-centimeter blocks. They, of course, looked so much different than anything that we've ever seen in our life before. So we took 7 pigs, cut out the back muscle of the pig, made a 2-centimeter deficit in depth, and placed the Mural 3D into that area. We studied survival animals out to a 4-day, a 14-day, 30-day, and 90-day time point just to take a look what that product did in that animal. And I was really, listen, it could be a nidus for infection. It could cause a seroma. It could cause a multitude of issues. I didn't want it to do that. And so before we started this, I wanted to make certain it did what we thought it could do. So just a quick look at the results at 4 days. So this is a cross section of the back of the muscle, and at 4 days, you can see the sticky cells around where the Miro 3D had been implanted. I'd like to point out in the center, there is a pore because it's a liver. So livers have a lot of vasculature in there. Within that liver, you can actually, if you get a Miro 3D piece, it's unlike, no two pieces are alike. There's channels, there's vessels, there's vasculature remaining. And in that piece, there was a, infiltration of blood into that, from that pig into that piece of Mural 3D. So that's what I like to point out. This was just at 4 days. So obviously it's very uniform and you can see the product is there at, in its original shape, but it's responding well into that wound bed. So at 14 days, again, a cross section, you can see the integration at the base of the product into the native tissue. Initial cellular infiltration just at 14 days. Now, of course, I'm dealing with a healthy pig, so I know we don't deal with healthy patients all the time, but again, this is just to prove the initial point that it wasn't going to do anything crazy when we implanted it in a living model. At 30 days, you can see again this cross section where it's really starting to turn over. The collagen of the product is starting to turn over to the native collagen of the animal. And at 90 days, where that red dotted line appears on the photo, that's the original implant of the Miro 3D. And you can see it's really integrated well within the native tissue. So we thought, okay, this looks good. It's collagen on collagen. It's not going to do anything crazy. And it looks like it resorbs quite well again in a healthy model. FDA, when we submitted our animal data as required by 510K to FDA, they said, okay, of course you have to do a wound healing study. So we did a typical wound healing study. We did submit our implant study, but they wanted to see a topical wound heal study. So we did that. We studied at 3-7. Every 3 to 5 days, we checked it, and within 56 days, we fully healed, the pig. I hated the study, quite frankly, because no one actually rips out your product after 3 days of implanting it, and it just prolongs the healing. But that was the model FDA required, so I like to show it because this is a topical model, and it did heal the animal. But let's take a look at kind of our first clinical uses after we received clearance on August 18th, and then we took it into the field to treat patients on the 29th of August. So this is one of our first cases, few cases that we did. This was a foot abscess that appeared at the hospital, highly infective, necrotizing fasciitis. They had to debride it down to the bone, down to the fascia in the bone layer. The patient was highly infected, so they placed him on IV antibiotics, put a wound vac on him, put him in the hospital for a little bit, cleaned it out again, brought the patient back and placed Miro 3D into the deficit. So this was started at a 22 centimeter long by what 4 centimeter wide by 1.5 centimeter deep deficit. Placed a two of the large sizes of Miro 3D and one of the smallest sizes of Miro 3D. And at post day 10, the measurements, a little bit improvement on the length, not insignificant, I would say, a little bit of improvement on the width, but that depth went from a 1.5 centimeter down to a 0.1 centimeter. So really filled in that space and healed that patient within 68 days. Now, this was a patient that was pretty, it was pretty crazy. We healed it with one application of Miro 3D. I will share that the patient was on a wound vac for the entire time. So clearly that helped as well. Here's just another clinical example. This is a pilonidal sinus case that was resected. It was a recurring. I think this patient it was a young patient, had this recurring 6-7 times, and the physician was ready to take the patient to the OR and do a flap procedure. Tried Miro 3D one more time, resected the area, placed Miro 3D. It fits very nicely into that void. I like to show this that you can actually suture that in place. So this is the demonstration of that suture in place. And at post day 29 was full wound healing. This occurred early in September of 2022, and I still keep up with this physician, and this patient has not recurred up until I think I talked to him a couple months ago with no recurrence. Here's a post-amputation wound where the wound measurements, again, 7.5 by 2 by 2, and there was a sinus tract. And I will tell you, Our sweet spot for Mural 3D is sinus tracks, tunneling, undermining spaces, you know, where it's very hard to get anything else to conform to those spaces. This is where we fit very well. Post day six, you can see the wound reducing with the main wound reduction, but the key here is that that sinus tract was completely resolved into this patient, and a full wound healing result at post day 57. And I believe I did send Dr. Karamani all of these clinical case studies in full format too. I'm certain that they can be shared. And then I like to show this one, although it's not very impressive on the screen. I like to share it because this was, I think, maybe our first or second patient ever that we did. And I called up a physician in Florida and said, "Hey, I have the product cleared by FDA. Finally, can you get a patient?" He said, "I have a perfect patient." Brought the patient in. It was Florida weather, no air conditioning. She clearly had major challenges, transportation challenges, hygiene challenges, and I looked at him and I said, "Do you have anybody else?" Because it was going to be tough. You can see the wound vac had been on her at one point in time, and it was not fitting well. The patient was pretty non-compliant. But the key here is that the patient, it was a post-paniculectomy patient. The patient had a 2.5 centimeter tunnel, and we were able to resolve that tunnel within 10 days. And that was really the key because that was the typical part of using a wound vac and not being able to resolve the tunnel. So that was resolved. It did take 127 days to resolve with the rest of the treatments. But over the course of her treatment of 127 days, I believe she got 5 applications simply because she could not and would not get to the clinic on a normal basis. So it just took that much longer. But, you know, again, it's the tunneling that was amazing on our first patient that we ever treated. All right, then just a couple more slides here. I want to share that we have Mural 3D fibers available. This is going through an application process for a HCPCS code, and if it's granted, it will be available for reimbursement April of next year. But I'd like to note it because what we do is we take the liver lobes. Remember, we delobe it, we cut cookie cutter the different blocks. Whatever's left over from that liver, we throw it in a blender, and we're able to create milled versions of Mural 3D. So what's nice about this, unlike most of the powders or the particles that you have, is that liver is very hydrophobic. So it's not, you can mix it with saline. It's not going to necessarily turn to a gel or a liquid. Mural 3D will serve that purpose, but it will allow you to really get tiny, tiny pieces for cracks, crevices, discrete areas that you're unable to deliver other types of products. So we're hopeful that this will become available with coding soon. Mural Tract, however, is available effective tomorrow with a HCPCS code for reimbursement. The concept here, I used to be an interventional cardiology nurse. So what we did is we took a cuboid, a Mural 3D, cut into a rectangle, and we took a stent crimper and we radially crimped a block of Mural 3D onto a access wire. So it's a nitinol wire with a floppy tip. The blue section that you see in the photo is a push rod. So it's a catheter that's just able to be pushed into a discrete area of the tunnel. So if you have a very narrow opening and you have a larger expanded section that you need to try to get something into, this is Mural Tract. Once you deliver this tube cylinder of Mural 3D into that tract, you hit it with a bolus of saline and it will expand about 2 times what its compressed diameter is. So you can see the sizes that are available, 3 millimeters and 5 millimeters. It will expand about 2x of that original size. And then the size, the 5 and the 9 centimeters are simply the length. So this one will be available, billing and coding effective tomorrow. Indications for both of these, it's the same product, just in a different form. So the indications for use head to toe are the same. And that is the end of my prepared talk. So I'll open it up for questions or if you want me to clarify anything.
Thank you very much, Carrie. That was a great introduction to the Mural 3D. I have now had the opportunity to use this for a couple of patients. I can attest to the really the ease of use and the ease of application. It's a lot more easier to handle and manage versus some of the amniotic grafts that y'all may be used to. As soon as the amniotic grafts get a little moist, they all kind of lose its sh you really can mold it and manipulate it to whatever conformation you think would be best to get that into the wound. So I do want to kind of affirm those statements. Like our other products, if you have a patient that you think is appropriate for the graft, we will submit the same information for IVR review. If that is approved, you'll go ahead and get the product shipped to your home. One thing that will be slightly different, and we are working on a long-term solution to eventually have a template in separate template to use for the use of the Mira 3D that will have a lot of the same elements, but again, like I said, slightly different. For example, to with the size differences of this being measured in cubic centimeters versus square centimeters and those types of things. So do be on the lookout for that to come. That email will come out here in the upcoming days. So I'll go ahead and open the floor to any questions or comments.
Like, as far as third-party players go, will it be the same setup, requirements as, say, biologic, other biologics and stuff like Medicare and Medicaid and stuff like that?
With respect to coverage, we are covered under Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans. If you have a commercial insurance, then we would recommend highly that you run it through our third-party reimbursement group anyway. I would say we have about a 30 to 40% approval rate on commercial insurances, but we are not officially on commercial insurance plans right now. We are conducting an RCT, with the thinking that that would help us for our commercial coverage in the future. But yes, we have had about a 30, 35% approval rate for commercial. But we are covered on Medicare and Medicare Advantage. Medicaid is a hit or miss for us. I mean, it's there are some states that we have definite coverage under Medicaid, and there are some states that we struggle. So we rely heavily on our third party to help us out with that prior to product applications.
Any other questions?
It sounds pretty interesting. And I kind of like the idea of using a negative wound vac with it. So what's your take on that? Because you made a statement that you had one patient where they used a negative wound vac and you didn't have a problem with that, or you liked that, or you didn't like that, or what was the deal with that?
Yeah, I did make a pretty bold statement about that. So I like it because I know that two things will happen. Number one, nobody's going to disrupt that thing, right? When you place that graft in there, you don't want anybody to come in and inadvertently take it out. When there's a wound vac in there, it's going to protect it. I like it because I think wound vacs offer a not only the protection, however, but I mean it's creating a wound environment or a healing environment that's advantageous for that wound to heal. So, if you take a collagen, pure collagen scaffold, fully opposing to the native tissue that you're trying to heal, and you give it a good environment to do so, we marry very well together with wound vacs. I'm not saying that everything, you're not going to see positive results if you don't use one, but when you're dealing with deep deficits, oftentimes you're thinking wound vac potentially anyway. So you marry
And
those
that's a
two.
black sponge you could use.
Yes.
Okay.
I liked it in the case that I showed it because it was a surgical debridement. So you started with a really clean bed, and I just and it's a foot, and you want patients to be compliant. So for those reasons, I think we saw the results we saw because of that.
Is there a minimum on the how clean the wound bed is? I mean, if you get it down to, 90% granulation, 10% slough, is there some sort of like, I mean, to me, that's not real bad. I don't know if I want to probably want to delay treatment with that, but I'm just curious, is there a sort of a bare minimum? Because sometimes it's hard to get 100% granulation, but I can get real close. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we've debated that a lot with providers, and I can't say there's a good, I don't have a good ratio to give you, but I will share that when you get to that 90-10, generally the consensus in the provider world is that it's good. It's good. As long as there's not active osteo going on and other comorbidities that are uncontrolled. You know, if you have a decently clean bed, which I would say 90 is appropriate. But I always leave it up to the provider because I don't want them to ever come back and say, I came back and it's completely gone because it got eaten up.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again, Karen Anthony, for being on the call tonight. We really appreciate your time and your explanation of Mira 3D. And if anything does come up, we will be in touch.
Fantastic. Yes, thank you again for everybody jumping the call and for the invitation to present. It's we're really excited, and if anybody's going to be at SCWC in Vegas later, let us know. We will be there.
Perfect.
Gary, if anybody needs any further instruction on this, how would you guys handle that?
Yes, so you can certainly get a hold of Anthony, and Anthony and I are definitely partnered, and I can help answer any questions that he is not able to, or you're welcome to reach out directly to me. So either one of us can help.
All right, very good. Well, I think that's going to conclude it for the meeting. I want to thank everybody for coming on board tonight. And if there's any other questions, please let me know as well. Have a great night, everybody.
Good
Thank you
night.
very much.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Good night.